From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, our friend Sean Maida joins the show to talk about CMS workflows for landing pages. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Craft Commerce, a brand new e-commerce platform for Craft CMS. If you're a web shop that likes to create custom-tailored websites for your clients, you're going to love Craft Commerce. It's extremely flexible, leaving all the product modeling and front-end development up to you. And it's got a simple and intuitive back-end for content managers. To learn more and download a free trial, head over to craftcommerce.com.
Today, we're excited Sean Maida is returning to the show, this time to talk with us about the different CMS approaches to managing website landing pages. Sean is an established leader in technology with over 15 years of professional development experience. Driven by a passion for people and technology, he founded Visual Chefs in 2005, and since day one, he's worked tirelessly to create meaningful digital experiences through thoughtful interactions with the Visual Chefs team and the people they serve. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Hey, thank you. You guys make that intro sound like so good. So, man, I want commercials with you all talking.
Nice. Well, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. Like you said, started Visual Chefs in 2005. Have both Visual Chefs and EE Coder, which is super confusing to some, but in a way, EE Coder started as like a glorified landing page. Later kind of became a company or a service. And then we're actually in the process of rebranding. So within a few weeks, both Visual Chefs and EE Coder will go away.
Oh.
Which is super exciting to me after 10 years. But yeah, live in Richmond, Virginia and Churchill, play soccer, have three small children, four and two almost.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty much the majority of my time is chasing them around. So,
Sean, not to put you on the spot, but can you share anything about this rebranding? Is it all just going to be like one name, one company or?
So yeah. We worked with the folks at Focus Lab, which was just an amazing experience to give them a little bit of props. You know, really stepped back and looked at, you know, the work we were doing and what our customers were coming to us for and decided that it just made the most sense, like that neither brand was currently representing us the way we wanted. And we've just changed over 10 years. So within the next like 4 or 5 weeks, we should launch Foster Made, which is our new brand. So super excited.
Wow. Congratulations. How long has the process been going from start till, you know, a couple weeks?
Oh, like 3 years, right? Like you can't do our own projects.
Yeah,
I think,
right.
You know, not working with Focus Lab that long, but I think just us from the point where we said, man, we need to change to the point where we were like actually doing dev was a couple iterations, like a couple name change explorations with different sort of vendors and companies, and then finally arriving to where we're now really, really close. So
exciting.
Yes.
I know how that goes. I can say, though, I think one thing I can pat ourselves on the back for is we forced ourselves to have a very limited time frame to get the job done.
I was impressed with you all when you did it. So
we almost did it at an external force. We agreed to write an article for Net Magazine that was going to be out, and we needed to promote the company in the magazine. So that gave us a drop dead day. Like we gave them a URL that didn't exist at the time of the article. So
sweet. I was trying to use this podcast as my motivation. And like 20 minutes ago, I just had a conversation with Nina in our office. Like I was like, we're not going to make it. So
it's not the end of the world.
We're going to Africa in a week. We're not going to make it. Yeah, but it's great. So
well, good. I'm excited to see it. And I'm not at all surprised to hear how great your experience was with the folks at Focus Lab. I mean, great people over there.
Definitely.
Let's get into today's topic. And just a little disclaimer to our listeners in advance that this is going to be a bit of an interview of Sean, but also a bit of sharing some of the stuff Leah and I have been doing. So a bit more of a, like a collaborative experience here versus us just grilling Sean with questions.
That is good.
Let's just start at the basics of it all. Like, how do you define a landing page, or how are you seeing your clients define landing pages?
Yeah, You know, so I think, as you know, we are like more of a technology company and not really like the marketing branding mm-hmm. side. But we do get a lot of requests for landing pages. And I do think that we, you know, even in our own work and for our new site and for, you know, like I said, even the old like sort of E-coder when it was initially envisioned, it was like a destination, I think, for people coming from external sources. Mm. For us, very often it's like ad campaigns or marketing campaigns. So it's like people, again, what we see is it's like people coming to a page really off of like some very specific sort of like collateral or search or like user targeting. And it's that page is like trying to tie two things together, like what they were looking for or how they were found, and then sort of what that like value add is, or like, what do I want them to do? And sometimes it's like, for us, that's like, submit the contact form, please, you know? Mm-hmm. So
in terms of your clients, is that pretty similar? Do they specifically say, I want a contact form there? Like, what is the purpose for landing pages for clients?
Right now, we're working with a major construction company. So they provide like siding and different building materials. And so I think for them, you know, it's they're out running these like, actually have, you know, commercials and marketing mm-hmm. Ads. And it's people like coming, you know, maybe for more information. So it's not necessarily like, you know, in our case, it's, hey, can you submit this contact form because we want you to hire us. But for them, it may be like, mm-hmm. here's a PDF that we want to kind of give you with information about our products. I think ultimately because they want the customer to buy their product. But mm-hmm. I think that's answering your question. You know, people come in really for some information. And so we'll be, you know, we might build 10 landing pages that are all very similar, but the messaging sort of changes based on what people are coming in for.
Well, we're doing our own thing with landing pages. We've just started for Bright Umbrella building out landing pages. And ultimately, our call to action is to contact us, to hire us. But honestly, I feel like our goal for it was really to get more content in front of clients in this during the sales process or the proposal process, but yeah. without having to right. jam it all into emails or proposals or giving them a link that they could go to that focuses on, say, they need membership or landing pages. Like, we might have a landing page about landing pages.
Right. Yeah, I think that makes sense because I think, you know, going through our own redesign, there was this real like tug of war happening between like me and Focus Lab, who's working on like our messaging and branding. Man, I hope it's okay that I'm talking about them so much. But they, you know, they're like so focused on what that message is to the customer. And I was thinking like, man, I need more like SEO value. And like mm-hmm. what we realized is we actually had different groups of people. We had people that were coming and sort of exploring our brand and exploring our site. And we had people that were coming in like because they Googled Expression Engine and we mm-hmm. had an ad for them. And so what we found is that by like trying to jam all that content and stuff into our like regular site flow, it was actually confusing. And we were, by making these landing pages, we were able to give people like the specific information or put out the message that like we're the expert in this thing you came to look for,
right. mm-hmm.
without sort of like convoluting the whole site with trying to say like, we do craft, we do EE, we do like in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think similar to what you're saying. So
I think it can really, now that we've done some for different clients for different purposes and we're doing it for ourselves, I think my perspective on it is, one, it's like a destination from some other place, you know, whether right. that's an ad or a pay-per-click campaign or something like that. But it also needs to be, you need to be able to create them as you need them. Almost like yeah. how we've, in the past, when you're thinking about CMS workflows, we thought about blog posts and news as things that might happen daily, if potentially even multiple times a day. And landing pages have that same sort of feel to them versus the more quote unquote stable parts of a website.
Yeah, yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. It's funny to me because I think that's how I thought of like, said this a couple of times, but it's kind of how I thought of E-coder when I first created it, was like, it's really just this like glorified landing page or service page. And so when we started exploring like the Visual Chef's redesign, I remember like I made this like document with all of these ideas for companies. And it was really just like ideas for landing pages, but mm-hmm. I had like sort of taken it way too far. And I was like, well, this works. Like, we just make five or six pages and stand up a brand, you know? Mm-hmm. And they were like, no, like, you can do landing pages and accomplish the same goal without confusing the heck out of everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. So I agree. Like, yeah, it's great for people coming in off those destinations and kind of getting like that picture, you know, mm-hmm. of what it is that you do that they were just looking for.
And the other thing that you kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, especially is you were the client of Focus Lab. Mm-hmm. You were thinking about SEO. And I think that's something that a lot of clients, you know, of course, as part of their marketing campaign, they think about landing pages, but a lot of them are sold the idea of landing pages simply to increase SEO juice for Google. So how does that work for you? Why was that your mindset when you were first thinking about landing pages?
I think a couple of reasons, probably. I mean, SEO is like this topic that's been like drilled at us for years, you know, and it's like mystified. I mean, it's maybe the word, like, it's really weird. And it's like all the spam I get is like, you need SEO. We need to optimize your site. Your site doesn't show up, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just like in our heads now. But at the same time, like I know the value. I mean, so much of our traffic and for a lot of our clients comes off of search, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not just paid search. It's like actual search, you know, organic search. But, you know, when you start doing your site, you can like get in you know, with like the new Foster Made brand, like we're really trying to keep messaging simple and clean and like not have just walls of text mm-hmm. being thrown at people. And that sort of like counteracted what like the SEO people we'd work with in the past would say, you know, like you need more text, you need so many keywords, you know, you need pages like of just content, you mm-hmm. know? So I think that's why it was in my mind. But I think the idea of like using your blog posts and those sort of things to get that SEO value, mm-hmm. but they're still like maybe a little more diluted in a way than like your targeted sort of page, you know?
Yeah, I believe because part of it is too, is that when you have a landing page, you've got a shorter URL in general. So that gives you a higher ranking. And usually that URL is very, very specific using keywords as well. So that adds to it. Plus there's also internal linking, right? Because the more landing pages that you have, like you can have a blog post and it links within itself, but I believe it's stronger if you've got different landing pages with different URLs that like interlink with each other, as well as the blog, as well as the news, as well as the about. Like it's just all these natural, legitimate internal links as opposed to like the black hat stuff, like keyword stuffing and all those kind of things. It's just a natural way to continually add original content that's tweaked slightly per page. So that does increase SEO. Plus, it also shows that you're updating your site frequently to Google. So they're like, oh, more stuff's happening, even though all you're doing is a blog post that linked to a page that already exists.
Right. To me, it's like you said about being able to stand up those landing pages quickly in a way is like refreshing because of my mindset of where I was of like starting services was really exhausting because it was like such a big undertaking where you like see a market need and you like want to address it or just test it out, you know, and it's like running a few ads and throwing up a landing page could be a really fast process, you know, whereas, yeah, I don't know why I went down that thought process 10 years ago, but it was exhausting.
I think it's one of the things that we see one of our clients is doing. It's a little more strategic, but it's the same vibe that they have a pay-per-click guy. He's like their AdWords consultant specialist, and he's constantly putting together unique campaigns based on the analytics he's doing of their audience as well as their site. And each campaign needs its own unique landing page that hits, at least in this case, on particular geographic markers.
Right.
So he's doing pay-per-clicks, let's say, for the Los Angeles area. And so he needs a landing page that's catered to the Los Angeles area. And then 2 hours later, he's got to do one for San Diego. And it's just that sort of rapid deployment, I guess, is a way of putting it. But since you were talking about SEO and we were talking about how important, you know, good legitimate content is, let's talk a little bit about landing page design patterns. For example, there are landing pages that are like super long, that they have quite a lot of content, but there's always the client saying it all needs to be above the fold. And no matter how many times you try and educate them on the fold, the reality is there's a desire to have a whole lot of content, but how do you make it important when there's so much of it? How do you identify what's important? So have you seen any successes with super long landing pages with your clients?
Oh, man. You know, I think not to answer that question directly. I was reading, I kind of asked the team here for like feedback prior to this. And Steve, our UX guy, had sent me some articles from HubSpot. And there was a really good one on like five myths of landing pages. And one of the items in there, I think, was talking about the fold and content. And I think the point of the article was really that you have to use it. Like, we have this preconceived notion of like long pages are bad for users, but long pages are good for SEO. So we're like thinking, well, that's not going to convert well because it's too long. But really, I think, and what this article was getting at is like, you have to test these things. Like, you have to do A/B testing. And so you use sort of the like all this industry knowledge and say, well, you know, maybe long pages are bad. Let me try and keep it short. But then you might have a scenario where the content or the thing you're trying to communicate to the user just like needs more information for people to be able to digest it. And you're just not going to boil it down to like 25 words. And so the article had like some very specific examples where they had tested, you know, a contact form above the fold and below the fold on like a long content page. And like conversions were significantly better below the fold because users, like their theory was like users actually need time to process this topic. And so they need that information. So I think what I would say there is like, really, like, don't just take like, you know, the industry says, well, this is good or bad, but like really think about what does it mean to test that theory a little bit. You can stand up the page quickly, you can edit it quickly, you can set up tests real quick, and then you suddenly are converting like 20% higher. So why not do that, I guess, instead of like just a generalization of like good or bad?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there are, it's all contextual. Like, for example, one of our clients runs major promotions throughout the summer, like, you know, giving discounts on registration and things like that. And the goal of those is to really get a focused bit of information to their audience base really quickly that kind of conveys a sense of urgency. They're usually like time-based kind of things. And so they're not dense. It's focused, it's quick, and it's very clear what they want you to do from it. There's only one CTA.
Right.
And then for what Leah and I are doing with our landing pages, they're really more informational. And like I said, they're there to support our sales process more than anything. And ours are much longer. And we have more than one CTA on our pages. Because during our consideration of what our goals were, is we do want people to sort of take that time to process and read and get a feel for those things. And we're hopefully effectively using the CTAs to draw them through that content, or the content to draw them through the CTAs. Whereas the client scenario I was describing, they're not trying to get you to process much of anything other than, hey, we've got a 50% discount on registration, good for today.
Right.
And so it's all contextual. Like you said, not only do you have to test, but think about your audience. What's your goal? Do you have to go into, well, here are all the classes you get with this discount and all this other stuff? No, you just tell them there's a discount.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. Like, we have a client that sells like home delivered produce. And, you know, they don't currently have landing pages, but I'd imagine that if they did, they could be very simple, you know, because they're like, they could run ads. They would want people to fill out the form, convert, like, because for them, they just really want somebody to come and try their product, you know. But like, I think us, like you, like, I think that you're putting that information out there. We are like, not, I think, just to convey maybe who we are, but I think we want like our clients to understand that, or leads to understand that, because we want them to have like a certain level of like investment and attachment, you know? So like, I actually might not want somebody filling out the form without reading a little bit of copy.
Right.
It's like more to wade through, and it's like, you just
qualifies people a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think you're right. Like, very contextual makes sense, you know? thinking about it.
Within the same client too, like the one that Emily was mentioning, our client for that particular promotion, because that one was very specific, was a short one. But this client also has super long ones as well, and ones that don't necessarily even have very blatant CTA. It's literally for branding purposes and for trust building before they send the other marketing with the shorter CTA. So it's a part of a bigger marketing campaign, really. And how big or how long or how short the landing page is really dependent on what the purpose of that particular specific campaign is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, maybe how targeted your market is. Like we've been doing, one of our larger clients is kind of gearing up for a redesign next year. And we've spent, you know, really months on the phone with companies like Umbul and Dynamic Yield and Optimizely, like evaluating and just reviewing platforms. And, you know, one of the things some of those platforms do is they provide like personalization and targeting of like user segments. And so the people coming in are like fairly, like they're almost targeted better than our Google ads that we run. So I think that, you know, we haven't gotten there yet, but I'm like interested to see how that kind of plays into their ultimate landing pages that they'll have for conversion, because those people will be so specifically, you know, or potentially like so specifically targeted down to certain like demographics and, you know, that sort of thing.
I think the very nature of what we're describing is just that landing pages have to be really flexible.
Yeah.
And I think the minute you say that word flexible, then you're kind of opening a can of CMS worms, because how do you give them the ability to make a landing page on the fly? And typically this is a marketing person, it's not an HTML person. So they need to be able to drop their content into fields and leave it at that.
Right.
But we have situations where like some situations we'd like this content at the top, and then some situations we want this content in the bottom. And then in other times we want to pull in, you know, stuff from a totally different expression engine channel or like highly, highly customizable.
Right.
And it creates so many different potential ways you could solve it. And so let's talk about how we sort of build the ability for our clients to manage this content. Let's just start talking like with a basic landing page. Like how have you approached that in Expression Engine? Is it just like a channel?
Yeah. So I think first, before you get into building them, like that thought process does have to back all the way up into like the design, right? So you're like creation of systems for pages, like elements and some like strategic planning of like how those things can come together and like what it's like when they're there or not there, you know, because sometimes we'll see, you know, hey, I need to build these on the fly, but like the four or five landing pages you get are so distinctly different. Mm-hmm. That it becomes really difficult because it's not just a matter of content placement, but it's like a print design that's been, you know, it's like I've got five posters that were designed by five people. Like, I don't know how to do this. But I think when you back up and you start to create those systems, you know, traditionally for us with Expression Engine, I think it's been a challenge really because of like really planning out the options for people, you know, and we never really got into using something like Content Elements, which I think was intended to allow, you know, a little more flexibility in how you published. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah, it would have been most likely a channel entry or a few with like variables to turn things on and off and, you know, the conditionals in the template. So if this doesn't exist, do this. And, you know, really trying to put the notes into field labels or field types that like the people publishing content could understand that, you know, and I love Expression Engine. I don't know if that was something for us that it did like really well compared to like some of your newer options, you know?
Like what newer options?
I mean, I think like
put them on the spot.
Yeah, put me on the spot. Well, I would like to talk about our sponsors, Kraft. I say that, but we've been using Statamic 2.
Oh, okay.
And have been like super happy with it. You know, and I think both Kraft and Statamic have, I think it's called replicator fields, which are like Kraft's matrix. Mm-hmm. And so you define a bunch of fields for somebody and then they can sort of reorder their page at will. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that to me is just in a really powerful amount of flexibility is that, you know, I still like need the design system and or the I still need a page that's sort of built into a system so it will support moving things around.
Right.
But, you know, what I've even found on the new like Foster Made site for us was that I really wanted to build it myself, at least the Statamix side, so that, that I could have the experience of doing it. And I found myself first like taking the EE approach of like making a bunch of field sets, or if you will, you know, or channels. And then like I got halfway through and I was like, wait, I think I can just do this with like one field set. Mm-hmm. Because it was, you know, the pages were so close. And it was just like, well, sometimes I need a testimonial and sometimes I don't. And sometimes right. I need a CTA and sometimes I don't. And sometimes I want it to be like above the testimonial mm-hmm. or below. You know, I think those, I guess to describe this for the listener is like you can, if it was like stacked like lifesavers, I mean, you can just grab one and move it up, you know, mm-hmm. grab one and move it up or take one out and it dynamically changes the page. To me, that's really like powerful from a publishing standpoint. So I don't know if you've conquered that in EE yet, but for me, that's been a little more difficult, although something we've done. So just not as flexible, I guess.
Yeah, we haven't leaned on the content elements add-on that you mentioned for EE, which I think might do that sort of, you know, move the lifesaver to the top or the bottom of the stack. What we have done, and unfortunately, it's not the best solution, but it's what we are able to do with where their version of EE is and where they are in terms of making it a major investment in sort of a site rebuild. Like we're getting close to that point where they're almost like, I think it's 6 years and things have changed so much in terms of staff and marketing and all that other stuff. So what we've done is created different templates for the different types of landing pages that they have. And then they have structure. So when they're adding a page, they pick from the landing page that they're trying to create. And then each landing page is tied to, well, some of the landing pages share a channel, some have their own channel just based on the custom fields. But it's behind the scenes from a developer standpoint when you know what you can do with like Craft and Statamix, like with this drag and drop, it feels clunky. But the user's finding it very workable. It's very clear to them what they can and can't do with their landing pages. And we're able to sort of, honestly, they come up with like a new landing page requirement, it feels like every 4 months. And so we're sort of able to just follow that process each time, which is not so painful.
Yeah, I think that makes sense too. I mean, I think we maybe get spoiled a little as developers by some of, you know, the newer CMSs, and I still love EE. But yeah, I think we did a website for like a major gift card company, and they had, you know, sort of landing page concepts and the flexibility. And it worked fine in EE for them to be able to pick templates and be able to choose, you know. They just had a couple channels that were like essentially for the same purpose, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part, like I've never done EE training that took longer than like an hour ever. Right. So people get it. You know, I think just us, like sometimes as developers can, you know, move on.
Well, I guess it really depends, again, the scope of the type of landing pages that your client wants and the amount of flexibility. For a lot of simpler clients, if you just made, let's say, 3 different template options, and in Expression Engine, all they do is just choose which of those 3 template options are, then that's pretty straightforward. But if they want to be able to do a lot more customization in terms of, I want a CTA here sometimes, but a testimonial at other times, and then a bullet point here, and then an image here at other times. Mm-hmm. Right. But once you start having those conversations, then, you know, depending on how early you have this conversation, let's say this is just a prospect, then that type of conversation actually affects the CMS you choose versus the current CMS that they have. Or if this is a client that hasn't updated their site or their CMS in a while, then maybe this is once, if you start having more and more of these conversations, then maybe the next project is a different CMS altogether order to save them time and money from making all those changes. And it's interesting you mentioned Statamix with the changing of the stacks and stuff. That's definitely the exact same thing for Craft in their matrix field. And it's exactly how I built our landing pages at Bright Umbrella. Because it's funny how you mentioned, oh, sometimes I want a testimonial and sometimes I want to have a CTA. That is literally what I built in Craft. And it literally means just creating something called blocks, matrix blocks. Right. And you just call it testimonial. And then this other one just is CTA. And then the other one's an image. Another one is just a regular text block. And the other one is headline. So if you really want to switch around headlines and not have it attached to a specific paragraph, that can happen too. And so you can really go down the rabbit hole of how customized it can be. That being said, I also had this same approach for our blog, and the longer the article...
Yeah, the more painful.
The more painful it gets, even though it's like hyper-customizable. So sometimes having like, let's say, one headline field and one body field, which is the classic, still is the best way because it's the easiest to parse for clients or the easiest to parse for us. But when you have, for one of my latest articles, I had, I don't know, 20 blocks because it was a long article. And there were block quotes and pull quotes and paragraphs and images and all these different things. And once I added it all there, it was great when I was plugging it in and being able to reorder things. But if I made a mistake, it's like, okay, where do I go?
You got to scroll all the
way. Yeah, exactly. I have to scroll and then I have to find it and then I have to drag and drop. But having that option there is great, though, to be able to drag and drop. So again, it's kind of like... What, again, is the content that your client is going to make? Mm-hmm. How do you balance that with administrative headaches and their own idea of technical understanding of things? Because, again, if it's a short page and they just want to be able to reorder things, have as many different content blocks as you want or like conditionals and all those things, and that's great. But then if it's like they want to do that giant, long conversational landing page with the contact form at the bottom, then that might become like a giant beast. Mm-hmm. Right, but then you can also argue, well, one giant WYSIWYG field is also a nightmare to administer. Right. So that's just a conversation you have with your client.
Mm-hmm. Here is a copy of Dreamweaver. This is the new Dreamweaver 12. It's your new CMS.
So I actually think this is a perfect segue to a question I actually had later on our list. But, you know, all of this ability to customize and the more blocks and the more conditionals you build into the CMS for the content entry process, the potentially more complicated your output is. And the potentially poorly performing page you're building, like because you're querying the database 30 times or, you know, whatever the situation is. And so let's talk about performance, because this is actually a big issue for us with the one client I was talking about with the promotions. Their landing pages have to be up because they're emailing like 35,000 people. And so if those 35,000 people all hit that page at the same time and it wasn't built well, the site crashes.
Yeah.
Like literally the site crashes. So we've had to do a lot to account for that. Have you struggled or found challenges addressing the performance aspect of landing pages?
Yeah. I mean, I think the performance aspects of CMSs in general, but it does like certainly like, you know, in the EE world, you keep adding fields. The more fields you add, just the slower your system gets overall, you know? One thing I've really liked about Statomic thus far, and I haven't used it in a high traffic sort of scenario, is just fast. It's text in a file. And so, I mean, it's been really fast to develop with. And the page is just like, I mean, it's the same thing you got when you were like generating pages of C cache on Expression Engine, you know, it's really quick. So I haven't had that, like, and we just haven't done that much craft work yet to sort of know, but like in the E sense, for sure, it was, you know, if I have a channel with 100 fields, you know, it's slow to work with too, but then, you know, you're really like sort of on the back end of that, you're trying to like cache page output or, you know, we've gone and like written custom add-ons to get content out of the database just so that we can parse it faster, you know, and just like really trying to lighten the load.
Yeah, I feel like your comment about how fast Statomic is exactly what we had Daniel Fowler on the show. He used Statomic to build the University of Georgia's, was it their business site, Leia?
I don't remember.
One of their departmental sites. And for a large university, that's not a small thing, and it gets a fair amount of traffic and usage. And he said it's just fast.
Right.
When you don't have the database involved, it's a huge difference.
Yeah. Definitely.
But that means caching, you know, if you are using a system like Expression Engine, install CE Cache and or Stash and make it as static as possible.
Yeah. And I think that that's, we've come into a lot of sites over the years where like, it's the same old story. It's like my site is just not performing well, or you could say my landing page isn't performing well. And you look at your options and you're like, well, I can't rebuild this for you in a way that's really like reasonably like justifiable cost-wise. And even if I do, it's not going to be, but like so much faster. So like what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to like flat file cache that page, you know, and I think you can do that with landing pages. I mean, we've done it with news pages, you know, and just skip the CMS and just hit that sort of rendered HTML page at that point and really overcome that sort of traffic problem.
Yeah, that's exactly the approach that we're taking. It's a little bit more hands-on because they're running so many campaigns that it's almost literally at the beginning of the week, we take a look at what campaigns are lined up and identify if anything needs to have another look at, another look-see, and make sure that the caching is tight on that page. Because good or bad, the reality is that when we're using caching on a template, that means that, let's say there's 25 landing pages that are using that template. And if they want to change something that's actually part of the template itself, then all 25 of those pages have to have the cache cleared. So there's all these other workflow issues that come into it on top of the fact that Leia and I think in an ideal world, like, oh, they'll have their landing page like well done before the email campaign comes out. So they have time to clear the caches and get them all regenerated and everything. But that's rarely the case with this particular client because they're making changes on a much more rapid basis. So we're having to kind of come up with new solutions to help them. Because we have such aggressive caching in place, because their landing pages are so complicated is why we have aggressive caching in place.
Yeah.
And then we have to build additional workflows because they also need to be agile with their changes. So it's so much more complicated than just a landing page. That's why we're having this discussion.
No, it makes complete sense to me, you know.
Let's talk a little bit about, in terms of when you're building these landing pages, like you come up with your solution, but you really need to know what the client needs in advance. Do you have a specific discovery process that you might go through with regard to a landing page, the kind of questions you might ask to find out what the client needs and how you might build it?
We don't have like pre-documented specific questions for that. I mean, I think we really try and interrogate, it's probably like the worst word I could use for this, but I think we're like, you know, we take a look at what the client's producing and really try and think through those scenarios for them and then put those questions in front of them, you know, of, well, you know, you're showing this on the left. Like, can we safely assume it's always going to be on the left? You know, they're like, no, I would like, can we just draw a circle? And I would like it to be anywhere along the circle. Kind of weird stuff. But we really just try and ask a ton of questions and think through, I think, based on that experience over time, like what those possible options are. And then really try and communicate, you know, the downside. So like that performance downside, like is there a potential upside to having 50 fields, you know? Maybe, but maybe not. And I think that's where like you could go back to that actual testing. And, you know, if we're like testing our conversions and measuring them and A/B testing, like we might find out, you know, I think that article I had, there was like an example where it was like they showed an image and the image happened to look like stock photography, even though like it's not stock photography, but just removing the image from their landing page was like a significant increase in conversions. And so I think, you know, you might be able to test some of those things with clients too. So to like, maybe you don't need as many options as you think you need, because I think we naturally sort of want kind of more options and more flexibility you know, maybe what we really need is the ability to make pages quickly, but we don't need like
everything,
a billion options, because it really doesn't change our conversions. We're just not like accurately measuring that to know.
The bottom line is you can give your clients as much information as you can about the pros and the cons. They make the ultimate decision and then they pay the ultimate price, right, whether that's good or bad, you know, whether things work out or they don't. You can only do so much, but it is that process of trying to get them to be really specific about what they need. I often feel like I'm in a place of being like, well, don't forget this might happen. You know, don't forget about this. This is important to take into account. And they're like, yeah, yeah, we know. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And I think that's like, I think again goes why I see like the value in testing is that maybe it's reasonable to not put that in a CMS at first. You know, maybe it's reasonable to build out a couple landing pages and serve them as flat HTML. Like, I mean, the client you're talking about, like, that clearly might not work at all. Like, they don't have, like, they need a lot of them. They need them quickly. But, you know, maybe you have clients that come in where it's like, well, I don't really need to go through the work of putting this in a CMS right now. Mm-hmm. I can just build an HTML page, throw it out there. Like, I had to do that anyway to even get to the CMS point.
Right.
And then if they want to change the copy of their landing page, they don't need to go edit the HTML. They like crack open Optimizely and they edit the HTML, you know,
right,
the content in their A/B tests for like almost no money. And then they run, you know, their 100 users hit the page and then they can see, you know, and they're like, oh, well, I put in an image and now this converts a lot better. Hey, you know, could you all like go back and add an image option in the CMS? Like it clearly like some cases where it works, so let's put it in. But I don't know, maybe that's just one approach is actually like stepping back. And not-
I love it. I love it. It's like a simple way of, you know, I think had I thought of that like 7 months ago, that might have been the time to get,
right.
Get
not you know, now.
Get, yeah, it's a little too late now to be like, oh, let's take a step back. But I think that would have been a nice approach. They came to us wanting to make these changes just based on some suspicions versus anything real. And I kept mentioning A/B testing, but I didn't take the reins in it. I didn't say, let's put this in an A/B test situation. Let's set you up in Optimizely and let's just do this. I think that's one of the things I think I'm learning more and more is that, you know, they're looking to you for answers. And sometimes you're thinking your solutions are only in this one little bubble, but you know, we could easily have taken them in that direction. We don't, I've worked with Optimizely, but I haven't done it for a client per se.
Yeah.
So that would have been an interesting way to sort of deal with that situation and pretty simple too.
Yeah. I think I like those services just because the flexibility, I think there's one called Dynamic Yield and I've like really, we haven't used them, but done 4 or 5 demos, like pretty in-depth demos with them. And they, I think they offer similar features that like Optimizely has. I mean, it's like the fact that I can go into an editor and like just edit, you know, what I see is what we're achieving with those landing pages, you know, but without the sort of technical build behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be a really good option to consider.
Have you ever had to work with other vendors when you're building a landing page solution?
You mean like external like integration work or like HubSpot?
Yeah, it could be that. It could also be like I was describing, we had to build landing pages for one of our clients' AdWords consultants. So we were dealing with him directly.
Yeah, I think kind of all of the above. We're doing Statamic build we're doing now has HubSpot landing pages. And so I think they... I don't know a lot about it, but I think we track users kind of across campaigns and across landing pages and conversions. And those are, we've got like contact forms that are kind of in the site on sidebars and that sort of things. And then we have like specific HubSpot landing pages that like a HubSpot team is building. We've done a lot of like integrations where the data from landing pages is getting like shipped off into other systems like Salesforce, just because, you know, your clients don't necessarily want that data sitting in Expression Engine as much as like we all love Freeform, you know, it's like not necessarily like your CRM. Also we've had, I think like we've had the ad consultants want us to do that work. And I think sometimes that can be a challenge. Like we have to kind of step back and really like work together to come to like a mutual place of understanding sometimes, mm-hmm. you know? It's like, the request you're asking for is going to cost the client $1 billion. Like, we can't do that.
So a little bit curious in terms of the actual integration stuff, because you're mentioning, okay, there's the HubSpot landing page. Is that completely decoupled and separated from the CMS? Or is it like, I got this widget code that I'm going to shove into a template?
I think we've done both. And I'm not technically doing this myself, so may misspeak, but I know we've done integrations where HubSpot's kind of given us form code and we've put the form in our pages. And then I would say cases where like the HubSpot form wasn't like stylable enough. Mm-hmm. And so we would like use our own form, but submit through HubSpot's API, which is fairly straightforward to use. So we have these landing pages, but we really want to control the design of them. More so than like the service would let us do. So you still have like conceptually like landing pages in this other system, you know, in terms of how you're mm-hmm. pulling data in with like specific form IDs or what have you. But those integrations may be a little deeper than just plopping a form on the page, or cases where like the client's just not making those landing pages on the site at all. I'm trying to think of, I can't remember the service. But, you know, we had a client recently that we were doing some ad. We needed to track like metadata from ads through to Salesforce for them. And their like landing page provider was like the one. They had a service like HubSpot that they could go and create pages quickly. Mm-hmm. But it like caused a gap in their data because the everything else we could capture and pass through to Salesforce unless you went through their like third party system. And it was like, well, now we've got this like users that are like self-contained in this little box and so get any real metrics, we have to like look into places. It's like there's a pro and con of that system. Like the pro was that it was really fast and cheap to use, you know. Right. The con was that somebody had to go through dig through data somewhere else all the time forever.
So that kind of leads me to the general question, like how do your clients measure, how would you measure the success of a landing page?
I think that you need to like set some metrics up front, right? Like I think, what are we trying to achieve and what are the goals? And then I think like it's important for us as like the people providing a service to try and find out like what the objective is and what's measurable, like what that bar is.
Right.
And so you may just be measuring like conversions and then you're saying, well, I'm getting 5 leads a month. Like I want to try and increase that to 10. And like that may be the one way you measure your landing page success is you're like, well, you know, we are now selling 10 boxes of this product instead of 5. And then I think that's where you go into like maybe A/B testing and you're like, okay, now I'm going to change button color or whatever and see if that goes up or down, you know? Mm-hmm. And then really, I think from there, like one of the things we had to figure out for us was like, because of we have different services and different technologies, there's like, sometimes you just, it's a different landing page, you know, and then it's, right. It, that becomes a different group of users. And what I just did on this other landing page doesn't work
right. For
whatever reason.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Laravel people like pink, maybe. I don't know.
So in regards to all this testing, because you've been talking about testing throughout this entire podcast, how long do you test for? So it's like, great, let's test this other version of this landing page. How do you understand if the test is relevant?
Yeah, I don't know. I know there's some like recommended probably guidelines for that. And I don't know what that is. And really, Steve like leads that work here. You know, for us, I think with our own pages and our own work, we're not trying to be that rushed. And so, and I guess the volume of leads we get, right? Like, I feel like I have to look at things for a month to see if for me, it's like our changes are working. And I also feel like it's like multiple parts. It's like, is my landing page not converting because my landing page is wrong? Or is my landing page not converting because my marketing campaign
right. That
got people was wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to like discern that a little bit. So for us, we move slowly. You know, one of our clients has 100,000 like active members. So you might be able to test a landing page in a day, you know,
right. Because
you're getting 50 conversions in one day and you can like clearly tell that one of them converted 50% more.
Right.
I think it's probably contextual and I'm sure there's some guidelines, but I don't know what that would be specifically. other than to say, like, it probably changes based on your scenario.
Yeah, and I just want to put it out there, as important as measuring the data of, like, the conversion success of a landing page, there's also a measure of success in from the administrative standpoint. And I mentioned this because I literally was talking to our client the other day, and she sadly told me, she's like, I didn't get the budget request to have more help on my team next year. So, you know, whatever we're building needs to be really easy for me to maintain and keep up because I'm not going to have any help. And so for her, the landing pages have to convert and they need to be up and online, but it's also got to be easy for her to build them on her own and change them and deal with the workflows associated with them.
Yeah. That makes sense. I think interesting, like, you have to make sure it's, like, not just easy for her. Like, you have to make sure it's easy for the person that replaces her.
Yes.
Right, right.
Because that's...
You couldn't be more right about this particular client.
That's when the, like, thing you built goes from awesome to sucking really bad is when the, like, person changes. I think, like, ease of use really is how intuitive is this is really important. Mm-hmm. And how, like, good are your instructions, you know?
Yeah, very.
And I think that's why those, like, setting goals and metrics is also, like, it is good for everybody because it does help, like, show success for your client, which they need internally, and like success for you, which you need. Like,
so I'm curious in terms of what success in general means, because in general we're like, yes, we got more clicks, or yes, we got more contacts, and obviously at the end of the day, all of us, the real conversion is a contract that's signed in a check in the mail.
Right,
that's always the conversion for every client and ourselves, right? But that's not necessarily always going to happen. Do you know, for you personally or even your clients, is there like a percentage, as in like a 10% conversion or even a 5% conversion, you know, makes sense? Because I know, for example, email campaigns, if you send it to 100,000 people and you get 10 to 20% opens, now let's not even talk about clicks, just the opens, that's actually a pretty good number depending on what the sector they're in. But when you think about like the raw numbers, it sounds like a low number.
Yeah, yeah.
So like what general percentages should, or I guess like what are clients asking for?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think it's another place where I think it's just so contextual. Like I'm thinking about a client we're working with now that wants to go from being like, they do home renovations and like additions and like they're the people that come and remodel your bathroom, but they want to go from that to like building custom homes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we're working with an outside vendor to kind of like do some Facebook ads for them. And I think they'll have some landing pages. But like for them, success is like building a custom home. You know, it's not going from like zero to 100. It's going from like zero to one or two because the bar, you know, they just don't have it now.
Right, right.
You know, I think for us, like, a 10% increase in like qualified leads would be amazing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know what like a good, I think it would, I would really be measuring like talking to the client and seeing, you know, what's realistic.
Yeah.
You know, how much of their target market are they already, you know, our one client with like 100,000 active users. I'm like, how much of your target market are you already reaching? You know, like,
right.
I can go bring you more people. They're not like qualified. They're not like, they already know you're, you know, they're just not going to convert. So I can make your percentage worse.
I
can get you more people to that page and we're never going to convert them.
Yeah. It's got to be contextual. I mean, Leah, when you're asking this question, I feel like you're, you know, we're in one of our sessions with our marketing consultant.
Right.
You're like, how do I know if we're being successful? And she's like, it's a long-term process. I mean, ultimately, we're talking about marketing here. And so I think all of Sean's points are completely valid because like one client who has had no projects in a certain area and gets one, that would be a win. I mean, frankly, for us, Leah, if we had one project that came from one of the landing pages, that would be a win.
Yeah.
But that number sounds low.
Maybe I can help you out. I'll go fill out the form in the next couple of days.
Well, I mean, the reason why I brought that up isn't necessarily just because like I know the answer or that I have an answer. It's just that I feel like for ourselves and for clients that we need to set the right expectations,
you know,
because they're paying you a lot of money to do a bunch of things, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a one-to-one conversion and they're going to get like a giant sale for you. Like a custom home is like several hundred thousands of dollars, right? So that's going to be a long sales process. No one's just going to use your landing page and think, yeah, I'm going to sign over my life savings now because I saw this landing page. It's one of those things where the sales process is a long process. A landing page is just part of that. And it's part of a touch point. And sometimes the landing page is something that potential customer visits several times before they press submit. So it's one of those things where it's also like maybe the statistics can be skewed because like, oh, so many visits, but then no one's pressing send. And then you start noticing that the same IP address maybe has visited it a few times. So maybe it's just that they need more time to contemplate and that's skewing the stats over like visits versus actual contact. There's so many variables to play with.
I think the statistics point is really interesting, right? Like as a consumer, and I think us as vendors have like a responsibility to be honest. And I think consumers need to pay attention. But you do see like, you know, marketing, some marketing companies would be like, well, we launched this and it has, you know, 100% increase in conversions. And you're like, yes, but it didn't exist before. Like,
right. That's factually correct, but...
Yeah. It's like, it was the only option was like 100% increase. So like, I think like the point being that yes, like really paying, understanding what those numbers mean is important and understanding like what you're measuring and like, is it relevant for that scenario and that client is really important.
Alrighty. Well, before we wrap up, do you have any, you mentioned a couple articles you read from HubSpot. Did you have any resources you wanted to mention for our listeners that we can include in the show notes?
Man, I can see if I can pull up. There were a few of those articles I was reading before this call. I mean, I could shoot them over. I do think that there was one about kind of the myths of landing pages that I found to be really interesting. You know, I mean, I think HubSpot's obviously selling you their product.
Right.
So I got to read their blog with like that view. But I find their blog to be like fascinating when like reading this topic or kind of researching some for this topic. Just right. Some of this data they had there because they have so many customers doing exactly this, you know? So I think they have good examples there. I thought that was probably the most useful resource I looked at. So obviously your site, everybody should visit Bright Umbrella, look at the landing page examples, and then fostermade.co in a couple weeks. So.
How about the A-B testing? So you mentioned Optimizely. What are the other testing services you use?
Optimizely, I thought, was great. And like, you know, a lot of the services we were looking at were more like content personalization and segmentation. And I think that they just became like more enterprise like pretty quickly. So they were like, you know, spend of, well, you have to have $30,000 a month or something.
Oh, wow.
But like dynamicyield.com, I think was a really cool service. I loved their demos. Humble, I think, is like a fascinating product, but kind of a different type of product than... Yeah, you know, I think Dynamic Yield to me had capabilities that felt like pretty close to what Optimizely had. Even services like Mouseflow, which aren't like A-B testing tools, but are just like video of your page, you know, being able to see what users are doing, I think can be like fascinating as well. Like I've seen some just really weird things where like users are kind of reviewing, you can see them interacting with elements on the page in a way that you don't expect. That causes you to go back and make changes. So I think like any of those heat mapping tools or video tools, as long as you have the resources to sort of look at them and monitor them and just not pay like $20 a month for something you never use, can be really like useful and insightful.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Sean. But before we finish up, we do have our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better.
We're out of time.
No, just this last one. It's going to be good.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
First question. Morning person or night owl?
Oh, night owl by far.
What's one of your guilty pleasures?
One of my guilty pleasures, man, I drink too much Mountain Dew. It is like, it's unsafe because it's like the only unhealthy thing I do, but I have an addiction that I need to cure.
What software could you not live without?
I think the team, like, we've really enjoyed kind of the move to Slack from really being like a Skype-based company. So I think as a company, like, probably live without it. But I think we've been like digging Slack for a while now.
What profession other than your own would you like to try?
So I keep trying. Well, I don't even have to convince them. We just can't afford it. But I think I would really like to open like a gelato restaurant right next to our new office.
Nice.
So I can have a new guilty pleasure.
What profession would you not like to try?
I think anything involving heights. Like, I can't jump off of like a chair.
Oh, I just have this visual. You remember those cartoons with the little mouse and the person jumping up on the chair, like back when we were in the 70s or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that's me. I'm terrified. I would stand there frozen for hours.
If you could take us to one restaurant in your town, where would we go?
Man, there is this like, it's not my favorite restaurant, but they're like my favorite restaurant owners right now. There's this little market across the street called Pops that is like we eat at far too often, but they're just like great food, great like family run local restaurant that I feel like is really are like trying to care for their like local community, which I think we just embodies a lot of like what our values are. So Pops Market.
If you can meet someone famous, living or dead, who would it be?
Man, famous. That is a tough question for me. Famous person. Can I just pass?
Sure. You're like, I don't care about people. Fame.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I don't know.
Scientist, business person, actor?
Actor. Like, my kids have like, you know, at five, my wife's been getting them to like listen to a lot of Michael Jackson. So I was like, oh, Mike, no. So that's why I like stumped myself, because I had an idea that it sounded horrible.
Oh no.
All right, we'll let you off the hook.
All right, thank you.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
A superpower? This isn't like a real superpower.
They're real.
I think I'd really, yeah, because they're real. Everybody should have real superpowers. Kids are going to be so disappointed. I think I would like to be in the mind of like all developers for like a day. Like,
at the same time?
No, like one at a time, maybe. Like, yeah, we're such an interesting bunch. Like, I'd like to see what goes on in some of those heads. My own office, really.
What is your favorite band or musician?
Oh, these are the impossible questions for me. We have a few artists in the office that are producing albums. So I'm going to like give a shout out to Alex Mejias in my office and Adam Tsai in my office. I will provide band links on our website for them.
Nice.
All right, last question.
Since they leave me to go tour.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah, they're like, I need to take next week off when the biggest project ever is launching because my band's playing in a bar in New York. Thanks. We support you.
All right, last question. Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles with chicken and like maple butter on top.
Nice. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining the show, Sean.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was a blast.
And in case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
Well, I think visualchefs.com for now, fostermade.co in the future, and the EE Coder Twitter profile will like become active and convert to Sean Maida shortly.
Ah, okay. Excellent. Well, thanks again for joining us. I really enjoyed this discussion.
Well, yeah, me too. Thank you.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Craft Commerce.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech and Devotee.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both. And if you really like this episode, consider donating to the show. Links are in our show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune into our next episode. We've rescheduled with Matthew Oliphant to talk about data-driven design. Be sure to check out our schedule on controlclickcast.com/schedule for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.